Hey, everybody. It is Thursday, January 26, 2017. My name is Daniel Bader, and this is the Android Central Podcast. This week, I am joined for the first time in a long time by the one and only Florence Ion. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. I'm good. I will not be eating carrots on this podcast.
Was that a problem before?
I mean, they're right in front of me, and they're so crunchy and delicious.
Oh, that's a good thing. I gave my dog some carrots earlier, and
it's the best.
She loves them. She's obsessed with them. If you don't follow her, her name is never mind. The other lovely person on the podcast today is Jerry Hildenbrand, aka the dopest guy in tech. How are you?
And I'm great, and I'm lovely. I just found out. I kind of like being lovely.
You are lovely. I love calling people lovely when they deserve it.
Well, thank you. You're lovely too, both of you guys.
Aww.
We're just kind of lovely.
Funny. It's the AC Love Fest.
So I have to say, I'm from Toronto, Canada, which is a country above the U.S. And right before I came on the podcast today, I told everybody to hold on. I have to take care of some Canada stuff, which was me posting an article about some phone coming to Canada. And what does Jerry post in the Slack channel but the music video of 1 Week by Bare Naked Ladies?
It's been one week.
How much more Canada can you get?
That is the most Canadian video of all time. If you haven't watched it, you will now get a sense of how living in Canada was back in the late 90s. But we won't digress any longer. We'll talk about Android and about the Galaxy Note 7 once again. That's right, folks. This week, Samsung unveiled its extensive report of why the Galaxy Note 7 blew up. I have to say, I'm kind of tired of talking about it. I've been on many different programs, different podcasts, different friends, like just people calling me randomly going, can you explain what you...
I'm really sorry I brought it up.
Yeah, we were kind of not going to talk about it. And then Flo's like, we have to talk about it. So let's talk about it quickly and then check it off our list. So, Jerry, TLDR, what happened with the batteries in the Galaxy Note 7?
Samsung says that the design didn't work. And once you introduced a few flaws... those flaws may exist in other phones and be fine too, which nobody's really talking about. They just didn't have room. They didn't fit. And it amplified those flaws and became a dangerous product.
Okay, so that's a good place to start. So the distinction here is that the batteries from two different suppliers were faulty in different ways. The first was from a company called Samsung SDI, or Battery A, which Samsung referred to in its report. And then the batteries from Amperex, or Battery B, had a different fault. But the ones in Battery A seemed to be a little bit more forgivable in some ways, because it was a case of the outer pouch having an indentation on the top right side. And that caused, in some situations, the battery to get... For the electrons to scatter and the battery to then engulf itself, right?
With close enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Simplified version. With battery B, there were some major oversights in the actual manufacturing, including the omission of a very important insulation tape on some of the batteries. So, Jerry, tell us about why a battery like this needs insulation tape.
Think of a battery as like a sweet roll or a jelly roll. It's a long, flat thing that's actually folded on itself, and it's put inside a foil pouch. Inside that, you've got two different types of metal. Those types of metal can't touch. They need to be connected only through a gel, an electrolyte gel, that carries electrons from one of those metals to the other. If those metals aren't properly insulated from each other and end up, they don't even have to touch. If they just get very close, it's a dead short. Things go boom.
So this was avoidable, right?
Yeah. First, we have to – the guys that gave this presentation were in a really rough spot because there is not a single battery that shipped with the insulation tape missing, because the moment you put it in and turned it on to test it, boom, fire, bang, dead short, big, big boom. But
big
you have
boom.
To take – yeah. You have to take the problem – and put it in words that people can understand that don't build batteries for a living or wire stuff or whatever.
I was going to say, you guys explain this thing so much more thoroughly and clearly than I read in Samsung's report.
They were in a really tough spot, so we can't take some of the things they say literal. They say it was missing the insulation tape. That probably means it was the wrong tape, or the tape was in the wrong place, or it was applied incorrectly and didn't do what it was supposed to do, instead of it actually wasn't there, because it had to be there, or it would have been an instant failure.
Interesting.
And that's a problem. That has nothing to do with the engineering department building the interior bay too small or the battery too big or a combination of both. That's a problem. Samsung charges their batteries really fast. They use a little bit more voltage than anybody else. They say it's very safe, and most people agree it's still safe. But Samsung does a lot to get your battery to charge fast and be big. That amplifies these problems.
Okay, so
no, it wasn't quick charge, or that. That's not what I mean. I want to say that real quick. I don't mean that quick charge was at fault. I mean Samsung, everything together as a unit to give us what we want, amplifies smaller problems.
Right. So I got a chance to speak with the VP of mobile for Samsung Canada, who obviously was on the same publicity train as mm-hmm. you know, DJ Co and a number of
Choo-choo.
The US of the US execs. But what he said was that Samsung is to blame here, because Samsung gave the battery specifications to these two manufacturers. The manufacturers
Correct.
Themselves created defective batteries, but ultimately Samsung has to take responsibility for endeavoring to push the boundaries of what battery technology can do, and failing to find the problems with them. And what they've done now is created an 8-step battery check that will go, that will live on its entire product line, not just the future of Note devices, but all Samsung products, including x-raying the batteries to make sure that they're not defective. So, I mean, this is a huge expense on Samsung's part. Not only did they lose $5 billion when they had to recall the Note 7 twice and discontinue it, but they now have to spend more money each time they want to check their phones to make sure the batteries are safe.
And that's – okay, you know, the things they're going to do to test the batteries themselves, like x-ray the individual batteries, that has to be done on the assembly line where the batteries are built.
Yeah.
So Samsung's going to help whatever X company, probably SDI, tool their assembly line to include this stuff, which means that they're not going to be able to just say, oh, we need more phones. LG, build us some batteries. Or Amperex, build us some batteries. That's out of the picture now, which is, you know, the long run, that makes a big difference.
But on the flip side of that, SDI and ATL make batteries for dozens of other manufacturers.
Oh, yeah.
So all of those lines,
right.
presumably, or most of them, are going to benefit from these improved, you know, the improved scrutinization of these batteries. So in addition to that, Samsung said that it's convening a a panel of sorts that will meet every year to go over lithium ion battery safety standards across all industries, not just phones. So what it's endeavoring to do is make batteries safer across anything that uses one, which is great. It's just unfortunate that it took 100 people getting injured for this to happen.
Right.
And an FAA alert. Oh my,
yeah.
It's great to see a company the size of Samsung helping the people that are trying to make batteries safer. You've heard me say it a bunch of times. I mean, lithium ion batteries are just inherently dangerous.
Didn't they just announce another, I think HP, like right before we started recording, just announced their own exploding. It's a common thing.
Right. It's 100,000 batteries.
Yeah. It's a common thing because that's all of our technology runs off that stuff, pretty much.
And a lithium ion battery is basically a blueprint for a chemical bomb. And we do things to keep it from exploding and instead release the energy slowly. But that's our fault. We need to be able to charge fast. We need to have long life and have a long overall lifespan. So lithium ion fits the bill. If we were happy with a phone battery that took all day to charge and only ran for 45 minutes, we could use old alkaline batteries and be safe. And there are a lot of ways to make them safer, but they're very expensive ways right now. That puts them off the table. Hmm. You can't triple or quadruple the price of the battery and sell 45 million phones. You just
exactly.
can't.
So I think the saga is over. But what we can look forward to and what we saw in live, you know, in a live shot for the first time today is the Galaxy S8. And that is well on the horizon. It's under 2 months, just over 2 months away, according to a leak by VentureBeat's Evan Blass, who's known to be pretty reliable when it comes to these things. So
Which is kind of nice, by the way, to have a little bit of a break between the Note 7 debacle and any rumors actually taking place.
Yeah. Well, it's also nice that Samsung is giving itself a little bit of breathing room, not only to make sure that it has enough stock of the Galaxy S8, because I think that there's going to be a little bit of an elastic effect from people who are so desperate for a new flagship from Samsung that there's going to be a big influx of people who want the S8 on day one, and then others will just wait to see whether it's safe, and then they'll catch it in the second or third round.
Yeah. That's a good point. Others will wait around to see if it's safe.
For us, yeah. I mean, us as in people who listen to podcasts about Android. Mm-hmm. But we got to remember, we are a small percentage. I think Samsung is going to make everybody feel good who is not a phone nerd. And you feel good about Samsung as a brand again. And they've got a new phone that looks really good. And it's going to sell really well. It's their year. The S4 sold great. The S6 sold great. Now the S8 is going to sell great.
I got to have to correct you a little. The S7 sold far better than the S6. The S6 was actually considered a disappointment. It sold 20, like, it probably sold 29, 30 million units.
Did I have them flopped?
But
I know
the S3 was the one that was so good. The S5 did okay.
I think
Jerry
might have had him flopped.
I was a year off. Yeah,
you're 1 year off. The conclusion here is this: Samsung, if it didn't have the Note 7 issue, would have had by far its best year in mobile phones ever in 2016. The S7 is by far the most successful flagship it's ever had. Even going back to the S3, which was a game changer, and the Note 7 before it was recalled twice and then canceled and then ignominiously banned from all international flights, was also a great phone. So the S8 looks awesome. Let's go over some of the specs. Flo, we just published this. Give people what they want to know.
We did just publish this.
All right.
But so I need to open it on Chrome.
You mean you haven't memorized it yet? I'll go over it because I wrote it. Okay. So we'll talk about what happened. All right. So Evan posted this live photo, and I looked at it, and I was like, that's an S7. But in looking at it, actually, it's basically an S7 Edge without any capacitive buttons below the screen. And there's a fingerprint sensor now to the right of the camera on the back of the phone. So that's the first thing that you'll notice. These phones
are... Okay, now I get where some of the Twitter shade that I saw came from. Yeah,
okay, so let's talk about that.
I didn't have time to look over the specs because I was heads down. But, okay, fingerprint sensor next to the camera?
Right, a little bit greasy, right?
What is that design decision? Who made that decision? Who's going to reach all the way up there?
It's like they took... What does everything the Samsung fan... What do they love about our phones? Let's do the opposite.
That makes no sense.
I don't get it either. I mean, I get it from a technical standpoint.
Is there really a legitimate technical reason for putting a scanner right next to a camera lens? Like, I'm assuming you mean like the way the logic board's laid out and all that?
Yes. Yes. Putting it there let them continue to use the same style and shape. I'm sure it's not the same board. And it lets it put the components in the same place and use the same kind of heat transfer system. It costs a lot of money to re-engineer all that.
Maybe they also did it just to try and differ. I know we're spending a lot of time on this fingerprint scanner, but I mean, everybody was tweeting about it. And maybe they put it up there because they're trying to differentiate from what the fingerprint scanner is like on, the Nexus and the Pixel devices.
Maybe.
And, I don't know. Well, I was going to say the HTC devices, but the HTC devices have them embedded on the front, kind of like where the home button would be.
Yeah, they do the iPhone thing.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. So I guess this is their way of standing out. I am going to be very curious to see how much I have to reach up there.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm holding a Huawei Mate 9 right now. It's a big phone. Presumably, it's going to be around the same size as the larger of the two Galaxy S8s. Let's just go over the numbers for a second. Instead of a 5.1 and 5.5 inch S7 and S7 Edge, there's going to be a 5.8 and a 6.2 S8 Edge and S8 Edge Plus. Or they'll probably just do away with the Edge altogether and just call it the S8 and S8 Plus. So it's an edge-to-edge bezel-less design. 83% of the screen is display, and it's a Super AMOLED display with a weird 18.5:9 aspect ratio, which means that it's going to be a little bit taller than the typical phone. It's not quite as tall as the 2:1 or... Oh, wait. It's taller than the 2:1 LG G6 because the 2:1 LG G6 is actually 18:9. So what this means is that the phone is going to be narrow but tall, which means that if I'm holding this Mate 9 in my hand, I have to reach to get the fingerprint sensor, which is centered right below the camera sensor. If I'm reaching over to the side of the phone to unlock it, this tells me one thing. Samsung doesn't necessarily think that people are going to use this as much because it has the iris scanner. Now, the iris scanner, and I realized I didn't write the iris scanner in the post, so I'm going to have to edit that. But the iris scanner is hopefully going to be a hell of a lot better than the one on the Note 7, because that was the one gimmicky feature that I really didn't like.
I liked that. I was kind of into it.
Here's why. Why you liked it, Flo. Because you live in California, and it's always sunny in California.
Oh, you know what? I can't dispute you there. Even when it's raining clouds here, there's still a little bit of light that leaks through from up above on our glorious state. I'm sorry, what?
The iris scanner just never worked if it wasn't perfectly light out. And
yeah,
that was
very true.
My biggest problem with it.
And I also don't wear glasses. So see, I am coming from a very, very privileged stance.
Bias.
You're absolutely right. It's not...
Not wrong. Okay, so Jerry, what is your take on the evolutionary design of the S8?
Smart.
I'm glad to see them get rid of the buttons.
Me too.
That's newer versions of Android since Lollipop, KitKat are designed to not have buttons that stay in the same place and the same shape all the time. With Samsung on board, people will finally do more things that they could have done with buttons that can be basically drawn anywhere. They don't have to be drawn in a certain spot. So that's a good thing for Android overall. Samsung fans hate it, and that's, I mean, that's going to happen. They liked what they had. Some people, that's the
backwards
whole reason
buttons.
They bought the phone. Well, the capacitive buttons and the physical home button with the scanner on
yeah.
it, I'm seeing people say that's why they chose a Samsung phone, and now they don't know what to do.
I found it so just in my way constantly. If I wanted to cradle the phone, I would accidentally, like, even with the little featurette where it turns off.
Yeah, and that's the part I hate. The Galaxy S7 Edge was actually the first Samsung phone I've ever used that the software wasn't a hindrance. It had enough power to do its thing without suffering because Samsung wanted the kitchen sink in there, which was great. And I thought it was great, but I couldn't use the damn thing because I kept hitting the sides and I would try to tap something and nothing would happen. And I realized that's because the side of my hand is touching the edge and their palm rejection sucks. And finally, that phone's in a box on the shelf
totally.
And I'm done.
Or when you're typing out a long reply and then you accidentally hit the back button because
yeah.
the back button is right underneath my right palm.
And I love the way it looks. I really, really love
so pretty.
The S7 Edge. And the Edge could be so cool with so many things, but palm rejection isn't there yet. It's just not.
And hey, you have that pretty edginess on this little leak that we see here for the Galaxy
yeah.
S8. The nice little double-sided curve that was on the Note 7 that made everybody just gaga over it.
Well,
I mean, if they didn't put it in there, they would be dumb. Like
that's very true.
That phone was defined by its symmetry, right? The front
uh-huh.
and back meeting with that tiny bezel on the side, like, and the fact that the color of the metal matched the color of the metal underneath the glass, so that you didn't have this contrast between the lighter aluminum. Like
the
subtle details,
super
in
hot.
That note, that the Note 7 had that the S7 Edge didn't.
Yet
if
the
that
button,
didn't
the-
come to the S8, Samsung would just be nuts.
But the holes on the bottom still don't line up.
I see what you mean.
Hello, Renee? No. Just calm down. Calm down. It's going to be okay.
I like the Edge design. I like the way it looks. I really like it on the back of the phone. It definitely makes a bigger phone easier to hold. But I hate it on the front. I am in that camp. They don't make a flat version. That's going to be a cause for concern amongst the Android faithful, and rightfully so. But we'll have to see. Maybe this will work great. I can't judge it until I try it.
So
maybe this
the one
will
thing-
work great for selling to the Apple faithful, you mean?
Well, no. I think that's a lost cause, and Samsung needs to stop pouring money into it. People will stick with Apple because they like Apple and they've got a ton of stuff in iTunes. You're not going to get those people away, and you shouldn't.
So right? It's unclear from this image whether we're seeing the smaller 5.8-inch version or the larger 6.2 because we have nothing – we have no scale.
I like that you called the 5.8 version small.
We need to put Godzilla in the picture so
I mean,
we can
Flo,
compare.
So here's the thing. According to the leaks that we've seen, it may be – only slightly bigger than the 5.1-inch Galaxy S7. And that's just
because of the screen.
The screen
and the bezel.
Takes up so mm-hmm. I mean, it's a 5.8-inch screen. It doesn't mean that the phone itself is going to be a phablet. So I'm actually really interested in seeing how, you know, whether the extra screen size can you know, if it extrapolates into a body that is physically identical or very close to the 5.1-inch S7. Because now I remember when Phil got it, we were in Georgia at our MonaCon, our little Mobile Nations get-together, and I just joined the company. And seeing the way that the Android Central team banded together to do this review, you know, Phil was the main point guy on the or in the review. But I remember him just singing the praises of this smaller phone, and everybody else going, "I don't know what you're talking about. I love the S7 Edge. It's bigger. It's got, you know, this nice curve." But now that I've used smaller phones, I've used the smaller Pixel. I have the Honor 8. I kind of re-fell in love with the smaller form factor. So if Samsung can pull off a 5.8-inch screen on a phone the size of the Galaxy S7, I mean, you can't do much better than that, right?
No, it's very true. And they'll show other companies too that, like, if that sells really well, it'll show other companies that is actually something that consumers want. I just want a bigger screen and a smaller body.
You know what? I'm not going to say anything until I see one beside an S7. I think it's going to be substantially larger.
Soon we shall hopefully see it.
You're right. I mean, it's entirely possible. All right, so before we move on, there's a couple more things I just want to touch on, because everybody talks about batteries.
Yes,
we're not going to talk about the safety. We're going to assume the batteries inside the phones are safe, but battery size. The 5.8-inch version will reportedly have a 3,000 milliamp hour cell, and the larger one will have a 3,500 milliamp hour cell. So assuming that the phone has the Snapdragon 835, which we've heard, which is a more efficient, built on a more efficient 10 nanometer process, and the screen is a little bit more efficient than previous versions, 3,000 milliamp hours could go a little bit further, right, Jerry, than it did on the S7.
Yeah, I mean, we expect everything to be better on the battery. I mean everything, software as well as all the components. It should be use less battery life while you're not actually using the thing. I'm going to bet that when you have it in your hand and you've got a game fired up or you're twittering like mad or whatever, I'm going to say it's going to use a little bit more battery just because it's got a substantially bigger screen because of the display rate, aspect ratio. There's a lot more pixels that are being used or not used. Mm-hmm. AMOLED helps, but you still have to use that stuff. But that can be offset by how much better it will be when you're not using it. So you're going to get, I would say you're going to get, longer battery life with a 3,000 milliamp hour battery and new components and better software. It's going to be something you'll like. You'll be able to tell the difference.
So that's another point that we haven't really touched on yet. The phones. So 5.8 inches and 6.2 inches, at a traditional QHD resolution, the pixel density would actually be significantly lower than they would on the S7s. But what we're seeing with this 18.5 by 9 aspect ratio is that Samsung is trying to add some more vertical resolution to these phones. The pixel density won't be as high because they can't add the same number of pixels and call it a day. And we've heard that these won't be 4K phones. So yes, the actual pixel density will be lower, but it'll be slightly offset by that extra 200 or 300 pixels on the vertical side of the display.
Well, it's they need to keep a substantial portion alive for navigation now.
Mm-hmm.
That's before there wasn't, 420 pixels tall or what, I don't know how tall it is, but now there's a place where buttons have to live, and that has to be ready to show you a button at any time.
Right.
Samsung hasn't had to deal with that, so it'll be interesting how they do it. I have high hopes. Samsung is really good at taking something and making it better.
So
good point, Jerry.
I agree, and I hope that I hope that everything works out. One thing we haven't spoken about is this DeX desktop thing, this Microsoft Continuum-like feature that you could potentially plug your phone into a dock, hook it up to your computer, and access Android in a desktop environment. Now, Jerry, as a Chromebook expert, does this sound like something you'd ever want to use?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to use it when we saw it long before Microsoft tried it. This isn't new, and it sucked, and it still sucks. It's
wake up, sheeple.
Yeah, I mean, you're driving the phone hardware with the battery that you have, and that's, I mean, you've maxed it out. When you add in extras, it's not designed, you know. It's optimized to run this weird screen in a 5.8-inch device, and when you start doing more with it, it's just going to tax it too much, and it's not going to give you the performance you want. There is no way to fix that when you attach it to something that's passive. Now, when somebody brings out a clamshell that has technology and electronics inside that can boost the output from a smaller device, then we'll talk. For right now, it's just like plug in any phone, pick the phone you have in your hand and either Chromecast to your TV or plug it in with HDMI or MHL or however you want to do it. That's what you got. It's no big deal.
NBD, no big deal.
Well, I mean, it's a cool idea that we're not ready for yet. It's going to take more than just a dock that connects wires. That dock has to do something else. And when somebody does that, things will change and everybody will copy it. Right now, it's I guess it's cool if you really, really need it. If you're stuck somewhere on a business trip and for some reason you don't bring laptops on your business trip and your boss hasn't fired you for that, you can plug your phone in and look at a company document. Or you can, you know, plug it in and show pictures to your grandma or whatever. That's kind of cool, but it's not game-changing.
So I'm just thinking back to the lap dock from Motorola when it debuted with the Atrix in 2011.
Yep.
And how much hype that got. And
yep.
That was such a failure. But it also ran, I think it was Gingerbread or... Yeah, it was
right.
2.3. So, right, I mean, Nougat has been refactored significantly. It has multi-window, you know, freeform multi-window support, all this good stuff. Whether Samsung actually takes advantage of it in a way that is meaningful and
constructive
adds value is you know, remains to be seen. But based on Samsung's history of software design and UX, I really don't have a lot of faith.
Well, not... Remember how little faith everybody had in the first Note? I mean, even I've got a T-Mobile original Note here, the one that they thought they were going to sell, and then they did some studies and realized that nobody's going to buy this thing, so they never actually sold it. Everybody thought that this is a stupid idea, this is a horrible idea, and the first Note and even the Note 2, man, they sucked. They really sucked, let's be honest. But by the time you got to the Note 4, they stopped sucking. And that's what Samsung can afford to do. They can build this dock, and the people who want this ability can use it, and they'll work around the limitations. They'll justify it. But it gives them some ideas how to make the next dock better.
Hmm. Speaking of next dock, that Kickstarter project, that failed.
Yeah.
Moving well, on.
Of course it did.
Of course it did. Moving on. You know, I think it's safe to say that the Galaxy S8 is the most highly anticipated phone of the year so far. But and this wasn't in our show notes, but I had a thought. We didn't talk about it yet last week. We saw the top half of the LG G6 this week.
Oh yes.
And Flo is like, oh, this guy, what an ass. You know, and that's, you know, another phone that has been getting a bit of hype after a pretty hard year. I wrote about how LG lost 300 and something odd million US dollars last quarter because the G5 just did not sell. And even though the V20 is performing well for LG, it's not in Europe, it's not in Asia, it's pretty much a North America only device. And it's a big phone that's expensive. And nobody would expect it to have the same interest level from the average consumer as a flagship like the G5. But the G6 looks like it could actually do something for LG. It's got this big 2.1 aspect ratio screen, 2800 by 1400. It's got, or maybe it's 2880 by 1440. We're not sure yet. It's thin. It's got this really high screen to bezel ratio. It's waterproof, which is great. It looks like it's going to have a dual camera setup again, which is quickly becoming one of LG's strengths. And I really like the way that LG does Android. So on the one hand, I think that this is great for LG. On the other hand, it kind of feels like the Galaxy S7 in 2017. So, I mean, am I wrong here, Flo? Like, is this a phone that you think will make any moves for LG?
No, I'm not excited about it. And I mean, LG's not really in the news for much. They haven't been in the news for a while. So I don't really feel like it's going to move the needle much. I think if anything, it'll just be a good step into figuring out maybe refiguring out its strategy. Just trying to find better words to put that together. But I think you get the gist.
You're being nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't know. I feel like this is kind of a, I don't know, guys. I read horoscopes. This year is all about, like, it's a relearning year. It's figuring yourself out and putting things into motion. And who's to say that's not going to happen with Android manufacturers?
So I get what you're saying. LG sold 14 million phones last quarter, which isn't
too bad.
It's not great. It's really not. It's down about 20% or I think it was 28% from the year before. This used to be the third biggest phone manufacturer in the world behind Samsung and Apple for units. And its ARPU was fairly high because. Or not ARPU, it's average sales price, ASP. And that's because it sold a lot of G phones. It sold, you know, the LG Optimus G sold well. The G2, G3, G4 were relatively successful.
Yeah.
And they've been repurposed now for the mid-range market. I see G3s and G4s all the time here in Canada because they're sold for nothing on contract. But the G5, and as what's so interesting is that if you kind of ignore the modular side of things, the G5 is actually a pretty darn good phone, right? The fundamentals are there. The screen's really good. It's running a Snapdragon 820. It's got a great camera setup. And they didn't mess up Nougat. Or sorry, they didn't mess up Marshmallow. It just got upgraded to Nougat. So Jerry, what happened with the G5?
Well, I think the best thing is that I think LG realized the mistake they made. The G5 was a really, really good phone. I think it was a better phone than the Galaxy S7. Go ahead and shoot me.
Interesting.
But it had a horrible finish. It felt really bad. It looked really bad. And it had this stupid thing where the bottom slid off and there was this other stuff you could plug in that nobody in their right mind wanted. Great idea. And Motorola's done it a little bit better, but normal people don't carry a bunch of little things to plug into their phone around in their pockets. They just use their phone. The Motorola version, you can put that camera on the back and just keep it there, and it's still a phone with a camera. The G5, if you wanted a battery that would last you all day, that's what you get, and you can't use anything else.
It was kind of clunky compared to the other flagships that came out. It was kind of a clunky one, not really... Honestly, it didn't really fit in with a lot of the other phones that came out last year.
Not
aesthetically and not, you know, practically.
And we didn't like it. And the people that sell phones, if you don't know anything about phones, you take the advice of the person that's selling it to you. They didn't like it. And that means that nobody's going to be buying it. And that's a shame because I really think the little bit of time I had using the phone, it was, wow. LG did a really good job on everything except how ugly this thing is.
I've seen a couple in the wild. Some people found them attractive enough.
Well, a phone is shaped like a phone, but you put it was a really cool finish that they put on there, but not for something that's going to bump and scrape around.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's what Phil said, and I want to be I just want to put this into perspective. So the Galaxy S7 came out a month before the G5.
It
so
did.
That's one thing. The Galaxy
that S- was one factor, yeah.
The Galaxy S7 was announced and released very, very quickly. It was announced and released a couple of weeks later. The LG G5 was announced at Mobile World Congress, but it took a month and a half for it to actually come out. And that was a very huge problem for LG because they were just completely overshadowed by Samsung.
Great point, Dan.
And not just Samsung. Everybody last year, HTC made an announcement, and that day at 2 p.m. you could buy the phone. I forget which one it was.
Wasn't it the 10?
I forget. I know it was in England, and we thought that was amazing.
Feels like last year was years ago.
It kind of was.
So if you get somebody excited to buy a new phone and you make them wait a month or 2 months, they're still going to buy a new phone. It's just not going to be yours.
Yeah, so, you can do that with movies. You can't do that with phones. Because phone is a thing you want to handle as quickly as possible.
Right. If somebody convinces me that I need a new phone, I need it right away.
The only phone that people are going to wait for, y'all, is the iPhone. That's just the way it is. And possibly the Samsung device for those diehards out there.
They know they're going to get exactly what they like, and it's going to be a little bit better.
Precisely. It's consistency, and maybe that's also been LG's problem, is they haven't, after the G3, there wasn't much consistency.
Right.
I mean, G4 and G5 were two very different beasts.
The G4, I mean, I thought it was a great phone.
It was a fine phone.
It just plagued with hardware problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it just was. It's went beyond a few people here and there having problems to the point where everywhere you look, everybody's talking about problems with it, and it's not like they sold 100 million of them. So the people with issues is a fairly high percentage.
Yeah.
That stinks. That's just bad luck. And then, you know, I really think they learned their lesson. If you look at the V20, take that stupid little screen off the top is what the G5 should have been.
Please take it off.
If that was the G5 without that screen, LG would have sold twice as many.
I totally agree. I would have wielded that phone over, you know, a boring black G5. Sorry, guys. Black is, you know, everybody can have a black phone.
Well, we're fickle, and we're proving it right now. Flo and I are sitting here talking about silly little things that makes us sound like we're just picky little phone snobs.
Well, when you pay all that money for that, when you pay all that money for electronics, you want stuff. I want a certain aesthetic to it, damn it.
So I completely understand where you're coming from. I disagree. I have that right. But more than anything, you know, I
respectfully honor your disagreement.
I'm being very polite here. There were a couple other things too. The G5 failed in a number of very important ways. It didn't know how to market itself, first
That's
of all.
That's also very true.
That's, and LG problems since forever.
It is LG's, and it continues to be. But when it came down to the fundamentals, I mean, I remember seeing Phil's review unit, and where the battery came out, there was a crack.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
In the,
I remember.
Right above. It was so poorly made for a phone that they claimed to be metal. It lost any semblance of a good reputation almost immediately after it came out.
It also felt, I mean, even though Jerry, I agree, that had a really nice finish, it didn't feel like the most high-end phone. I mean, you hold an all-glass GS7, it's a different tactile experience than holding like the cold metal sort of thin aluminum of the G5, right? I mean,
right. The G5 had a great industrial finish, but not for a phone.
Precisely.
That's just not the finish you put on a phone.
Yeah, which hurt its marketing, as Daniel's pointing out.
All right, so the G5 is over.
Dunzo.
The V20 Tomato. Continues to sell. It's a great phone. I've been using it with the Mate 9. I'm doing a comparison. And I thought when I first started using these phones that I would really prefer the Mate 9. But over the last couple of weeks, the V20 is more, I think considerate decisions around the software are paying off, are paying dividends. So, for example, the Mate 9, as improved as the EMUI 5.0 software is, does not by default show notifications on your lock screen. You have to actually go in to the settings for each app and enable lock screen notifications like you do on iOS, which is which is absurd.
No, that's perfect from a security standpoint. I love you, Huawei.
No, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd because
it's not user friendly.
But it's one of those things where if I have a Pixel or any Samsung or phone running Nougat, I have a predictable user experience. And on the Mate 9, I get a notification, it vibrates, and the light goes off, and I turn on the lock screen, and I know I have no idea what it is. And there's no way to double tap to turn on the screen, so I have to actually physically turn on the phone, you know, swipe down on the notification shade, and then it's not always in the correct order. So it's not always obvious what just notified me. And that 10 seconds I just spent hunting
in general.
Yeah. is absurd. So this is obviously a decision that the company made, and I respect it, but I don't like it. And I think it is one of those things where I just want Android to take care of these small details. The V20 has a few quirks, but by and large, it just works. There's just nothing about it that I go, I don't appreciate, I don't like the way that this functions. So, you know, long story short, I think LG did pretty good, and I'm looking forward to the G6.
The one thing, you're half of an audiophile.
I am half of an audiophile.
Have you noticed that the amplifier and DAC, mostly the amp in the V20, is burning in really well? I use it here on my desk. I have it plugged into a receiver, and I play my music from it in the middle of the day. So I'm using it quite a bit. And it's getting really mellow. I love the way the amp's burning in on that. And if you are that kind of nerd and you know what I'm talking about, you should probably look at it. It's that Saber amp in there has burned in really well.
I love listening to the V20. You're not going to like the answer I give you, though, because ask me which headphones I've been using primarily with my Android phones these days.
You're going to say some crappy Bluetooth Apple product.
Are you using Q-tips, Daniel? Are you putting Q-tips in your ears? Don't put them in the ear canal, because that's not good for you.
I know. But they just sound it's just so convenient to leave Q-tips in my ear all day.
Hey, if it sounds good enough, that's all that matters, man.
Honestly, it's so convenient. I listen to music all day because I work from home, and I forget they're there. I turn on my music, and it sounds, you know, 85% to 90% as good as the Bluetooth headphones that I love. Oh, I forget the name, but something X3.
Icon X? No.
Not the Icon X. Hell no. Anyway,
I don't know. They all got X's in the names. Yes,
they all do have X's in the names.
They sound pretty good, and more than anything, they just work. They work on Android phones way better than I thought, and I think that they're a great buy. So, that being said, I do get why you'd want to buy a V20 for the audio. I think we're running a bit long on talking about LG, so let's kind of shift gears a little bit. And we heard yesterday that Google I.O. will return to the Shoreline Amphitheater between May 17th and May 19th. Both Jerry and Flo were there in 2016.
I got a sunburn to prove it. I think I still have the marks on my on my skin from where my shirt was, because I was wearing a sleeveless shirt.
I have a selfie I took at San Francisco International, like 14 hours into my delayed flight waiting period.
Oh, no.
Of grumpy ass Jerry, sunburnt, just red as a beet.
Poor guy.
Loose around here somewhere. It was fun.
And Andrew was your chauffeur that entire weekend, or that entire week,
yes,
because Shoreline, as nicely laid out as it is, and if you don't know, the Shoreline Amphitheater is in Mountain View, California, where Google's headquarters are, And
right next to a marsh.
Right next to a marsh, even though it's very dry, and it was mm-hmm. even drier then.
It's also the last place that Jerry Garcia ever performed.
Oh.
At Shoreline?
So that makes it, yeah, that makes it very important.
Wow.
Well, that's kind of game-changing.
I know. I'm like, okay, everybody.
Well, do you know Shoreline was built
yeah.
for the Grateful Dead? If you look at it from the air, it's the bear skull.
No.
Yes, I'm
Jerry,
serious.
Why do we not have an article on this? Why do we not have an article
awesome.
On this?
That's awesome. I don't know a lot about the Grateful Dead, so I'm just going to take your word for it. But I do respect that. So Shoreline is hosting Google I.O. again this year. There were a lot of issues last year because obviously yes. it was the first time Google had hosted it at a place other than Moscone Center in San Francisco. But it just Moscone's too big and in San Francisco too expensive, and it just wasn't a great venue for the kind of conference. It's great for the WWDC conference because it's, you know, that's super dry and very, very, very dry. But WWDC is, I mean, Google I.O. is a very different beast. It's fun.
It's
colorful. Google wants to show off all these weird demos that take a lot of space. I mean, they had a freaking Project Loon balloon in the middle of the Shoreline venue. It was crazy.
It's
and
the
a damn
Android
pirate
community.
Ship. A full size pirate ship.
They did.
It was. And everybody should go to at least one if you can.
At night. I mean, developers deserve to party.
So the other thing, though, is that there was just too much interest in a lot of the sessions. The lineups were crazy. as press could barely get into any of them because there weren't enough press seats. And the organization was haphazard at best. We didn't know where we were supposed to be. The actual venues were laid out poorly, and you had to walk a really long way to get anywhere.
Air conditioning was scarce, so it was like you'd walk into those tents and it'd be like, oh,
well,
boy.
People from the East Coast got a kick out of seeing California. Oh my God, it's 90 degrees. And I'm like, well,
the California Constitution.
Yeah, it was 90 when I woke up at 8 o'clock yesterday morning to fly here. What are you complaining about?
But yeah, I was not expecting that heat. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. So Jerry, you know, a lot of what happened at Google I.O. last year didn't ship until much later on. You know, there was Google, there was Allo and Duo. There were, I'm blanking right now, but there were a bunch of really important announcements that just did not ship until much later in the year. So, you know, is that something that you think we can expect for the future of I.O.?
Yeah. I mean, this is Google I.O. is Google's chance to tell you, this is what we've been working on and what you need to get ready for. It's not, look what we've got, here's where you can buy it. It mm-hmm. never was, but they always tried to throw some sort of biscuit in there so people didn't have to wait. Last year, they just decided not to do that, not to worry about it anymore.
Right. Okay. So just to sort of jump in again, the two big announcements that I obviously missed were Google Assistant and mm-hmm. Google Home. So neither of those two shipped until far later in the year. Assistant obviously debuted on the Pixel and then is now in, or it debuted on Allo and then in the Pixel and now on Google Home. Google Home shipped shortly after the Pixel was announced. So all these things were announced in May, but shipped in September, October. That's a long time to wait if you're a developer. But the interest was so high that I don't think it's going to keep anybody from returning, right?
Right. You know, from a developer standpoint, the more advanced notice you get, the better.
Interesting.
Especially if you're traveling halfway across the world.
Right. But we take Google I.O. and turn it into a news event for non-developers. And Google wants to do that a little bit too. And they non-developers think a little bit differently. They want something now. You know, let's say somebody like Evernote, huge development team. You mean we get 6 months to work on this? Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That's very
instead
true.
Instead of this coming at the end of the month.
You could
like,
download
oh my
it
God.
Now
yeah.
and try it out. And everybody's like, no time to have fun and hang out with people I haven't seen in a year. It's time for me to go back into my hole and learn how to do this.
It's difficult to mesh the two different worlds together. like I said, in the past, Google has tried it, and I said they threw us a biscuit. They always had a product that attendees could take home, and it would be coming in a short amount of time afterwards, a month or so, except for the Nexus Q that never came. And that was for the consumers to be excited about, while the developers, like, you know, I saw multi-window on Android TV like 2 years ago.
That's
in
true.
One of the sessions. That's that side of it. And that's just not very interesting for us.
So, I mean, that's true. Of you know, Google I/O in general has always been pretty good about introducing new products and getting people excited about, you know, the months ahead. But I remember back in 2015, they dropped the M beta on us on day one. And we're like, here, have fun. But it barely worked. So everybody, especially all the press, scrambled to put it on our, you know, Nexus 6s. You know, it's very clear that, you know, Google has something of a reputation that it needs to overcome when it comes to these conferences. And especially the fact that last year they didn't give out any swag. That was the first time. And Jerry, and I agree with you here. You know, in years past, people kind of anticipated getting thousands of dollars worth of hardware just by coming to Google I/O, which isn't really fair.
Well, all of us have been to Google I/O, and we all know that day one has twice as many people as day two after they give away the free
and
stuff.
And that's not really fair.
No, because you get a $300.
Yeah.
$300 student entrance, and you walk away with $2,500 worth of stuff to sell on eBay.
But it's also not fair to the people who, like, plan, you know, all those sessions, and, like, they want to teach you about something that they're passionate about, and they have been mulling over how to teach this to you so you understand it, and they're already nervous getting up there, and then to just not show up because you got your free thing.
Yep.
It's rude.
So, you know, last year told us that they're done doing it. You know, they're finished. So if that sounds like you and you were going to get a student ticket just so you could sell Chromebooks and phones on eBay, don't steal a ticket this year. Don't take a ticket from a developer.
That's why I really like the fact that they were making it so fun. Because at first I was like, ugh, I am pressed. There's like nothing here for me to cover, like that sort of thing. But then what ended up happening is that a lot of us started covering what was happening with the community at Google I/O, like the way that people were coming together, and most of us were coming together over how hot and un-air-conditioned the rooms were. But, you know, it's kind of – that's kind of Google's shtick. I mean, that's the culture they're selling, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that about Google I/O. It's the one conference that I can always look forward to every year where I can have a little bit of fun in between all of the work that we do. And then before I joined Mobile Nations, I did Google I/O on my own. So, you know, at Mobile Syrup, I had to cover everything, and it's very difficult. You know, you think about how much stuff is announced at these conferences. But last year, when I was, you know, I was hanging out with Jerry, with Alex, with Andrew, with Phil, and I saw you, Flo, but you were still with IDG at the time. And you know, I think it was nice to get some FaceTime with people from Google. Mm-hmm. You know, we hung out with Rick Osterloh a little bit, and he kind of gave us his predictions for the future of Android
hung
hardware.
Hung out with Hiroshi,
who's awesome
cool.
to talk to.
Yeah.
And I think even Matthias Duarte made an appearance in the press room on day one, right?
In the press gardens, call them.
Yeah.
My favorite thing from any Google I/O ever is dumb, but it was eating lunch with Vic Gandotra before Google Plus and any of this stuff. This was way back.
That's not dumb. That's pretty neat.
And he was telling me how cool Google Photos is going to be and how much he loves it.
And
as I look how Vic is a Google Photos user, look at his public albums. The guy just loves it. He was telling me the truth. He was telling me how he felt. He wasn't telling me what Google wanted me to hear. And that was great. Just being there, listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's the culture that's being sold along with Android. And I think that we can all mutually agree. That's why we like covering this stuff.
Yep. And I I get to nerd out with people in real life that I nerd out with on the internet every other day of the year. So that's always awesome.
So, Jerry, we got to go get our Android ears out. We got to get them ready for Google I.O. Got to come decked out and all, you know, it's like going to Disneyland. You have to go get all the festival stuff.
Oh, I hope they bring back the fancy shirt for people based on how many years you've been there.
Me too. I'd be down for customized Android ears.
Yeah, Flo and I can have that swag. Look who's been to every one.
Seriously. Oh, come bring collector's us
cold
pins?
Beverages. Yeah.
It's like the CES. It's like the much less fun and interesting CES annotation on your badge. It's just like 5+ years. Congrats.
Oh, they used to give a different color shirt depending on how many years you went.
Yeah.
Like, at I.O. or at CES?
Yeah, Google I.O. At Google I.O.
Did you get a bag this year at CES, Flo?
No, I did not. But actually, now I regret because they were see-through, which is like the cool new thing now.
What?
Yeah, so like at a lot of really major events, this is totally a digression, but at a lot of really major events now, they ask that you bring like a crystal clear bag. Otherwise, they won't let you in.
Oh, right. So they can see the contents without actually having to like search. Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's becoming like a thing now at events. So I'm noticing.
Well, if you bring your own liquor, they lose a lot of money. That's, you know.
Fair enough. Bring your own liquor to Google I.O. Sorry, ma'am.
But before we step away from this, before we step away from this, every opportunity I get, I want to, Andrew is a lifesaver. And if it was not for Andrew, I would have left last year's Google I.O. an hour after I got there. Shoreline is just not built for somebody in a wheelchair. Everything is on a hill. It's all up. Both ways seems to be up. And they had cords and boards and pylons over the walkways.
That.
And it just, I gave up.
And the
up.
Little ramps they had for like over the cords were elevated. Yeah. Which I'm like, so you have to do a mini hike to get. Yeah, it was not.
It was wheelchair accessible, but wheelchair accessible meant you were going up a huge hill and going way around the back just to move 3 feet forward and get over a big square wooden box. Technically, that's accessible. Andrew is very tall, very, very strong, and my arms gave out the second hour I was there, and he saved my life. So I like to thank him every chance I get. This year, Andrew's got to come. Google, you have to send Andrew a ticket if I get in.
Shout out Andrew Martinick.
Yep. Yep.
Who's on a plane right now, or he'd be here.
Probably, you know, it's good to have him on that plane in case something goes wrong. You have Andrew there to fix it. Amen. Andrew, add Andrew to every situation to make yourself feel safer.
He's like our Secret Service.
Yep.
He's tall enough. He could be.
I was just going to say, put him in a suit and some dark glasses, Men in Black style.
Totally.
You could. You'd have to beat the women away with a stick if you did that.
I don't think I don't think he's looking. Anyway, another digression. let's go back to what we were talking about.
I hope he hears it so we can embarrass him.
Well, I'll tell
that's
him.
That's always fun.
It'll be like 56 minutes in. Jerry started hitting on you. Speaking of Jerry, we have a new segment or a new feature rather on the site, and it's in collaboration with our forums. And if you don't know, Android Central is, you know, pretty well known as a front page of Android, you know, features and news. And I think we're pretty proud of what we put out. But a lot of mobile nations, and especially in the early days of mobile nations, the way that we grew was through our forums. So, you know, our Android Central forums are still extremely popular. And we go in there every once in a while and we chat with people and we add our opinions and we ask people for feedback on various things. But what we've been hearing is that the people who frequent the forums are not necessarily the people who frequent the comments on our blog. And they want to hear from us in a more on a more regular basis in a more predictable way. So we thought, okay, let's create this thing where one of our writers, and if it works, we can do this. We can do more of it, but one of our writers is going to, you know, be there to answer your questions, regardless of whether it's about tech or anything else. So now we have Ask Jerry, and I love this idea. I think it's so fun that we have one place that we can go to to bug Jerry about whatever the hell we want to bug him about. So if you haven't seen it on the front page, just go to forums.androidcentral.com, and it's you know, just a couple of topics in, and you'll see Ask Jerry. Ask him whatever you want, because you know, he'll be there every couple of days, and he'll fill out the request. And what's the one weirdest question that you've gotten so far?
Somebody asked me whether I would prefer quail eggs or duck eggs with my red wine.
Whoa.
And your answer was?
My answer was duck eggs make me burp. I've never had quail eggs, and I only drink red wine when my wife makes me stop drinking bourbon. I just, that's, if you know me, that's just a crazy question because, come on, Dan, can you picture me eating quail eggs and red wine, drinking red wine?
Quail eggs are so small, you wouldn't get anywhere with them.
I can't, and I think next time we go out, I'll order you something with a quail egg in it just to see if you'll eat it. But I want to highlight one thing because, you know, just to highlight, you know, how conscientious Jerry is, you know, with the community. Somebody asked, you know, John 15 Paul asked, what is Jerry's origin story? He says, I've been a fan for a long time. Can you tell me the background? And Jerry wrote a novel about how, you know, before he was the Android writer at Android Central, he was a electric engineer, right? You were basically a guy who made stuff work, which I think is amazing and totally more, you know, than I've ever done in my life. So good for you.
Yeah, I went from wiring houses to building robots. That's the short version.
And then you were bit by a spider, and the spider had magical powers.
So I just want to read this one sentence because I think it kind of sums up Jerry in a nutshell. The first software I ever developed commercially sent an electric charge through an electrode to a Trojan condom, rolled over another electrode, and measured how much voltage it took to penetrate the latex.
Amazing. That's real science.
That's how they test the latex.
That's real science.
Latex mix. A condom is something you do not want to fail. The failure rate needs to be as close to zero as possible, and that means the latex has to be mixed correctly. So you need a way to test it that's non-destructive. So you roll it down over it's shaped like genitalia. It's an electrode. And it's in a big turret, and it goes underneath another electrode that shoots a spark at it. And the spark it starts out at a lower voltage, and it ramps up all in 1.6 seconds. And then software determines what voltage it was when the other electrode picked it up.
Well,
and
that's
there is
awesome.
You know, if it's less than this number, it's not a good latex mix. Stop the line, fix it. If it's more than this number, everything is fine.
Well, that's an awesome answer, and you know, I think a great way to end today's podcast with you thinking about Jerry's, you know, putting an electrical current through a condom. You know, there were a couple things we didn't get to today. You know, quick recap: Hugo Barra left Xiaomi, and he's now the head of virtual reality at Facebook.
Facebook,
kind of crazy.
Going to be
things.
Working.
Going to get interesting.
Park.
And in other VR news, Claude Zellweger, who helped develop the HTC Vive at HTC, is now working with Google on Daydream. So
topsy-turvy, y'all.
Huge moves in the VR space.
Yeah, I've heard some really, really interesting rumors about that. And if I ever get enough that I think it's worth telling you guys, that's going to be really cool on a whole lot of levels. Having a basically the creator of the HTC Vive working for Google.
Last year is just the beginning, y'all, in the VR, the consumer grade VR, as I like to call it.
Yep.
So it's only January 26th, but this year's already looking pretty good for Android, for Google, and for tech in general. So I want to thank you so much for joining us. My name is Daniel Bader. You can find me everywhere at Journey Dan. Flo, where can people find you?
Well, as always, you can find my writings on androidcentral.com, and you can find me at OhThatFlow on Twitter and TheSnaps, Snapchats.
And Jerry, what about you?
I'm on Twitter at GBHIL, but you can find me at forums.androidcentral.com/AskJerry.
Amen.
Nice plug, Jerry. Nice plug.
Well, it's I kind of like this. I love to talk to people. You all know I talk way too damn much. I love it. And this gives me one place to just talk to people. So talk to me.
Take my
entire day and let's talk about which is the best beetle or which kind of bird has the best eggs.
Hmm. Duck.
Ostrich. They lay eggs, right?
They do. That's it for us this week. We'll leave you with an ostrich egg in your mind. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week. Peace.
Ta-ta for now.
Adios.